and chill, keeping you company during the coronavirus.
Hi guys, it's Harriet Rose here. I hope you're all keeping safe at home, staying indoors, self-isolating, meditating, looking after yourselves and having a lovely day inside your house.
Stay home and chill.
Stay home and chill.
Ian Boltzmann.
We're joined by Jin Sarpong now. Hello, Jin.
Hi.
How are you today?
Good. Okay. Glad to be here.
I've had a thing today where when I found out you were a guest, I had an immediate response to what I wanted to talk to you about, even though we are going to be talking about other things.
Yeah.
But that I wanted to talk to you about. And also today on Twitter, people have also been telling me to ask you about it. And I've been getting annoyed because I've been like... I was gonna. Are you okay talking about it?
Of course I am.
Okay, here's what I would argue. I don't know whether you're still contractually bound or not. I would imagine you're not by now.
No.
I would argue with the Michael Jackson seance, so to flag it up.
When was this, June? What year was this show on?
2008.
I'm pretty sure he was still warm. It was fast, wasn't it?
It
was fast. I put it to you, June Sarpong.
Yes, put it to me.
I would argue that you, on that programme, although you sold it, well, that you didn't believe a thing of that.
Well, can I tell you the background
please?
First? Yes. So I had just moved to America at the time.
Okay.
And my agent gets a call just after Michael Jackson
died. Still your agent?
Actually, no, but not for that
reason. I understand that. Yeah. I understand that.
It wasn't my finest.
I understand that.
So I did also present Nelson Mandela's birthday party. I'd like to add that.
Nothing funny about that. No conversation there, is it, Jim?
No conversation there.
Well done on that. Back to Michael Jackson speaking from the grave.
So, yes. So, basically, so this is like a couple of weeks after he died. So, we get this call, we get this show, and I'd like to add this disclaimer too. It's a lot of money.
Yeah, wouldn't doubt that.
Paid for my kitchen.
Yeah, okay.
So, anyway, so we get this call, and they say, I think it's Sky One it was, and Sky One says, we're doing this informative show about Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
It's more sort of investigative journalism. Around his life and what it means post-death. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, I love Michael, this is great.
Did that call end, though, about his life and that, and you're going, oh, okay, and they go, and don't call us on it, bye.
Because they never mentioned a seance. Let me carry on. So then we did three episodes of this show.
Yeah, yeah.
So first two episodes was me in L.A., retracing his life, where he lived, blah, blah, interviewing members of the family. We had his mum and his brothers and everyone on this show, talking about what he meant to his fans, blah, blah, blah. Then I had to come back for the live show in London. And then they're like, it's with Derek Acora and David Guest. I was thinking, what a weird combination.
Yeah.
So then, as we're being briefed more, oh, Derek's going to do a live seance, but you don't worry, you're not really part of that.
You weren't, in fairness. You, for the majority of that programme.
I was still there.
Towards the end of it, as I recall it.
I was still in the room.
Yeah, you were, yeah, yeah. What was it like speaking to Michael Jackson with his Scouse accent?
Weird, with a Scouse accent. And David Guest.
Sorry, he said hello to Quincy Jones, Ian.
That's my favourite part of it.
Yeah, no, but the best bit was when he was with Elvis. Of course he was.
Who
else would he be?
I don't even remember that.
Oh, he was with Elvis. That was the first bit. Derek says, oh, I can hear him. He's with Elvis.
God, of course he is.
I don't even remember that.
Of course he is. He's with Elvis. Who else would he be?
Good God.
With in heaven. And so, yeah, it was quite random.
Honestly, I maintain now it's one of the funniest hour and a half of TV that I've ever watched.
It was their highest rated show that
It was amazing. It was amazing. Yeah. And there's like bits of it on YouTube and stuff. It was amazing.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. But not the full show. I've not been able to get the full show. I've got it on video somewhere. But several weird things going on with it for me. And there were bits that I genuinely I took issue with.
Okay.
Because I think if it had been yourself and Derek and maybe even David Guest as
well. David Guest was friends with
Michael.
But that's the problem.
That was the point of having him because the point was to have someone that Michael was comfortable with and that would make Michael reveal himself.
But in the con of how mediums work, the purpose that serves is it validates what's happening. So it goes, this is someone who's close to Michael Jackson, they've agreed to it, so you now can't see this like a Channel 5 show. You now, this is a real thing. This isn't a fucking about thing, this is a real thing. Sometimes it crosses lines.
Yeah.
And I felt that programme did because of the people you had in the studio with you, the three fans, who were in a state of extreme distress at that moment. And it felt like in an ad break, Derek Acora should have gone, it's not really him.
Yeah.
Don't get upset. It's not really him. Yeah. So please, I don't want to get you this upset at all.
None of that going on.
No, of course not. Yeah. I had an issue with that. With it, I had an issue with how close it was to the man dying. Regardless of what your thoughts of Michael Jackson are,
it
seemed
soon. I think it was less than a month, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was
fast.
The
stuff I filmed in LA was probably 2 weeks after.
No issue with any of that stuff. Yes. That's what you'd expect. Well, yeah. You know. And David Guest, and I just thought, I'm not going to speak ill of the dead, you know, because I kind of liked David Guest as a thing.
Yeah.
But I felt that was, unless he actually believed that Michael Jackson was speaking.
He sort of in a weird way did. Yeah. Because he was into all that stuff.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. Why he agreed to do it.
If I found out he didn't take a fee, I would feel differently about it, maybe.
No, I think he took a fee.
Yeah, but
I'm
sure, he did as well.
Yeah.
But do you know what I mean? If I found out that it was something that he just believed in, then it's like...
But anyway, you've got a nice kitchen out of it, June, so that's
really
good.
Nice.
That's a nice thing to come out of it.
Do you call it your thriller kitchen? Is there a mirror in it with a man in it?
Tiles.
Yeah. No, do you know what? I've always wanted to ask someone who was involved in that program about it.
I'm glad you did. And you know what? It's so funny. It's one of those things where everywhere I go, well, not everywhere I go, but it comes up a lot.
Does it? Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Michael Jackson seance. I'm like, yeah.
Joey Page on FUBAR Radio.
We're here at the Underworld, and I'm very pleased now to introduce to everybody a piece of actual musical royalty. It's Richie Ramone. Welcome to the show.
The Queen is here.
The Queen of Rock and Roll.
How you doing?
How are you doing? I'm alright.
Real good.
Time off, like proper time off outside of a touring schedule. What do you like to do when you're like resting up?
I don't know. I get really restless. After a week, I want to go again, but I'll write a little bit on this break, hopefully to do another record in a year or so, and I play a little golf.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And
any good?
I was down to like a 3 handicap at one time.
But wow.
That's kind of cool. It's like the total opposite of rock and roll. It's
of
outdoors.
Course, yeah.
You're not in a dressing room that smells like piss. And you smoke Cuban cigars out there. It's a lot of fun.
Have you got a golf vest? What's your get up? Have you got the proper attire?
In the 90s, man, they wore those weird colored pants and everything.
Yeah.
But now I just wear jeans.
You should tell my old man he's still wearing them.
Oh, yeah. Those stretch Sansa belt. I forget what they are. They come in all different colors. Yeah.
And where's home for you when you're not on tour?
Los Angeles.
Not bad.
No, it's good. It's warm and don't like the snow anymore, the cold weather. So that's why I moved there. But there's nothing like New York City. I mean,
no, I want to move to New York.
Yeah.
But it's pretty hard to justify going.
It's hard to go
to the
there.
Visa people.
It's very expensive too.
Yeah.
Now.
I do love it. It's
a great city.
You say you've been around the world twice.
Yeah.
Is there anywhere you've not been that you want to go?
Somewhere places in the Eastern Bloc. Been to Prague and Slovenia, but there's a few other countries I'd like to go to over there. The kids are really, they're off the hook over there.
Yeah.
You
know? A lot of people will have come to your music from your legacy and your history with the Ramones and stuff like that. How, in your mind, did that come about? How did you end up joining the band when you did?
It was just being in the right place at the right time. I was 24 years old. I was hanging in Brooklyn, New York, and my friend Matt, he was Johnny's guitar tech. We were hanging out, and he said he had to go to New York City. It was the afternoon. I said, where are you going? Why are you leaving? He said, oh, the Ramones are auditioning drummers. Well, I said, well, put my name in there. And that's how it happened. I got a call the next week, my little cassette tape that I still have, and it was the road manager saying to come down. I went to 2 or 3 auditions.
Amazing.
That's what it was. Yeah.
And what was you doing before that?
I was playing around New York City in different bands like Velveteen and Remod, you know.
Did you have a job or anything, or was you just...
Did I have a job?
Band to band?
Yeah, I had a job there. I was a security guard in a clothing store.
No way.
Yeah, I used to stand there all day. And there was a funny story, that, you know, right by Washington Square Park in New York City. And it was winter, and this was like a vintage shop, but they had all leather jackets. And I was walking around, and we used to smoke pot in the back room, and I came out. Someone said, look, and like a rack, 10 jackets were gone. I was like, what the fuck? So I went on the street, you know, me.
Like a detective.
And I saw a guy walking down in the park over his shoulder in a garbage bag, like over his shoulder. And I actually stopped him. I pushed him down. I got the jackets back. Pretty crazy. He had them in his thing. So did that. But, you know, most of my life when I was younger, I always played in like little bands, like weddings and bar mitzvahs. But when I lived in New York City, that was my job till I got the Ramones. Then I was in the Ramones, my first national act. Pocket full of money. It was a whole new world.
When you was doing that, do you remember a particular point where you just went, I've fucking made it now? Do you remember
a
specific...
Yeah, you didn't have to get up and go to work. You didn't have to do anything. We played a lot. You know, the Ramones played a lot of shows, so we kept busy. But it was nice just going to the bar and have a couple of drinks.
Yeah, sure.
Take cabs instead of, like, you know, on the tube and stuff.
I watched an interview somewhere with you where you said after that you felt like you needed to reinvent yourself, and then that was the reason for the solo stuff and all that, because you was just playing in bands but it didn't feel right. Then you decided to start your own thing. And I wonder what now makes you hungry to do it?
Took a long time off. 10 years I didn't even pick up a drumstick or even pay attention. I just lived off of women, you know. And then something was eating at me. I got a call from Joey's brother to play the Joey Ramone birthday bash. After he died, they had this bash every year. That got me going again. I started writing and everything. But I'm still hungry now. You know, that's a good term you use, because I see a lot of bands who were successful back in the 80s and stuff, and they perform like they're not hungry. A lot of bands who got to a peak to large audiences, now they play smaller places. They're not as popular anymore.
Yeah.
And they're not hungry, you see. That's kind of cool, and, you know.
How does that affect you personally? Do you really like kind of the small intimate places, or I wish it was
way better. You know, I do festivals and things, but I love the intimate place. No barrier.
Cool.
I like that.
Do you have to take any precautions, be it voice wise or just done exactly as you did when you started out?
No,
or how's things changed?
Eating and voice wise and exercise, everything has changed to keep going. But no, you can't party that hard every night and expect to sing every night. I don't do that. I just get to my point, and this show wears me out. By the end of it, I'm done, man. I'm finished. I'm wiped out. I give 100% of everything I got. You do have to take care of yourself. There's no doubt about it. You can't live like when you were 25. Can't eat cheeseburgers and chips every day.
Tom Latcham on FIBA Radio.
Hey, everyone knows the dance legend that is Fatboy Slim, real name Norman Cook. And he's on the line right here, right now.
Good afternoon. Are we live?
Live-ish.
I just read that you're uncensored. I do so many interviews where I have to watch my mouth, and I'm really enjoying the fact that I won't have to.
No, this is not one of them, Mr. Cook. You can say whatever you like, although don't libel anyone. We are still bound by the rules of society and the UK. But yes, not Ofcom, so say whatever you like. You can swear away.
Hell yeah.
So I was reading that you only take events on if they've got the five Fs.
No, they have three of them.
Three of the five Fs. Explain what they are.
The five Fs are, it either has to be a first, like a country I've never played, or, you know, a way of playing that I've never played, or it has to be a favour for a friend, or it has to be something that I know sounds like fun, or they're obviously finance is one of the things, and most importantly, food. But I have been known to book gigs in cities just so I can go to a particular restaurant. If you're just playing gigs just to have fun, not to further your career or to flog your new album or anything like that, then you can go anywhere in the world. So we've kind of narrowed it down with criteria of what turns me on about work, rather than it being strategic and part of a campaign.
You were one of the original, in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, the original sort of superstar DJs. They're everywhere now. And I wonder what you think of sort of the new DJs like Calvin Harris and David Guetta.
I feel sometimes like the naughty uncle who comes back at Christmas and has a little laugh at his niece and nephews about how much they've grown. And boy, have they grown. No, I mean, people like Calvin's a good friend of mine, and he's told me that I was big influence on him when he was younger, and there's DJs who are even younger than that who tell me I was the reason they started DJing. So I get a lot of respect for them. I have a lot of respect for them. I think they've kind of taken the ball that I helped get rolling, and they're running with it in fantastic ways. I'm lucky enough to live through a golden era of dance music and DJ culture, to be there kind of at the beginning of when it started taking off, and then thinking, how far can we take this? Can we get our own tent at Glastonbury? Can we get on the main stage at Glastonbury? Can we have our own festivals? And I've kind of been a part of that story, and I'm very proud of the part I played in it. And so, therefore, I am very proud to see how my nieces and nephews, where they've gone with it.
Harriet Rose on FUBAR Radio.
You're locked into FUBAR Radio, and joining me right now is Mr. Lethal Bizzle.
Yo, what's happening? Up? I'm good. How are you?
Really well. Much better now I'm here with you.
Yeah, thank you.
Things are really, really exciting for you at the moment. You seem to be so busy
getting tracks out. You've just dropped your latest EP. It's out now to buy.
Yes. Go get
Never Make a Million from a Grime EP.
Yes.
Is that something that someone told you?
Basically, they were just like, this music thing you're doing just basically is a joke thing. Wanted me to make different types of sounds and do things I just wasn't really into. And I was just like, bruv, like at that point, it wasn't even in myself, I didn't know it could be what it is today. But it was fun. I enjoyed doing it. A lot of people wasn't rating it. You know what I mean? I think when people see something fresh and something new, they want to write it off. They don't really understand it. They don't take time to be like, oh, give it a chance. So everyone just, not just myself, I think a lot of the early guys from my peers could say the same thing, that people just didn't really give us a chance. So that's where the title came from.
Do you feel like it's even more powerful now because you've shown that that's wrong and you've kind of proved them all wrong?
100%. You know, that's one of the main reasons why I called it that. And I just feel like the powers that be, unfortunately, see money and they take things seriously. And it's like, oh, wow, these grime guys are actually millionaires. Like, wow, like, oh, maybe I might see what's going on, you know. And it's just, it's sad, but at the same time, it's kind of like to show other artists like, yo, you can do this thing and, you know, and have a good career out of it. It feels good. And also, just all those people who were saying that before, you know, it's like a big fuck you to them as well, so.
And I guess it's for young people who are looking to get into music, even in the management side, they see you guys doing so well in the grime world, and it's exactly. like, actually, these guys just went into something they loved, they exactly. enjoyed doing it, 100%. And they smashed it and made a huge 100%. Impact on and the music industry.
That's exactly what it's got to be, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, we could have listened to those people, and it's, if we did, then what? You know what I mean? This whole thing might not even been here. So yeah, it's amazing to be able to create a blueprint for these new up-and-coming artists. You can be like, okay, cool, we've got these key figures now. From when we started or when I started, there was no one for me to look up to be like, oh, well, there's that guy. It was all Americans. It was all Jay-Z. It was all Nas and stuff. And obviously, there's two different cultures. It's just different, you know what I mean? So why I think people were writing it off as well, because we are almost like, not the equivalent, but I feel like grime is the UK street culture equivalent to what hip-hop is in America. And we were trying to become those figures. We were trying to become the Jay-Z's and those lot. And yeah, it just feels good that, you know, we're obviously maybe not quite at that level, but we're on the way there. And I just think the way the scene is right now, it's inviting for people to have another option to get into music and have more of a belief to like, rah, I can actually do this as a career and not have to work on 9 to 5, which is nothing wrong with that either. But you can, you know, do what you love and get paid to do it.
And does it feel good to be one of the founding fathers? You know, there's a lot of young kids coming out, getting into grime, getting into a genre they probably wouldn't have had it not been highlighted by you guys who've been working on it for such a long time.
No, it feels good. I feel it definitely gives me a head start, because being from the ground up, it's kind of like I've seen everything, you know what I mean? There's no story or nothing. I've been around all the eras. So it's really educated me to basically even maintain my position and be able to help others who want to come through, you know, because I feel that's very important for myself, who's got so much knowledge in this particular culture, that I spread the energy and advise people coming through. I think, you know, as long as the people still want me to keep making music, I still want to have some sort of influence on the scene and the impact of new emerging talent coming through, whether it's from wherever, you know, I still want to be involved, man. I'm here as long as you want me here, I'm here, man.
Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville on FUBAR Radio.
We got Frisco in the building.
Always a round of applause for our guest, especially one of your stature, man. It's an absolute pleasure to have you in.
Pleasure to be here, man.
Only took me like, what, 2.5 years of broadcasting? No, you're an absolute legend in this.
You've
just dropped Back to the Lab Volume 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's just the tip of the iceberg, isn't it, right now? Because not only are you a integral figure in the world famous Boy Better Know crew, you are the founder of The Den, which is going from strength to strength, and just generally an OG in British music.
Thank you, man. I respect that view and opinion, and very appreciative.
I've had the privilege of seeing quite briefly how you've worked. We've hung out in the studio once or twice.
Yeah, yeah. I was just saying that earlier on in the interview as well, that sometimes you have to know. There's a song on Back to Lab 5 called ICU with P-Money and Wiley and Prince T. I was saying that the chorus for that song, even though it had the sample in it, for the life of me, I couldn't find the chorus for it.
Right.
I couldn't, even though it had a sample there, I couldn't fit in the pocket. I tried about 3 different choruses. None of them sounded how I wanted it to sound. P-Money came and done that. As basic as it sounds, it was perfect. And I would never have thought to do that.
Right.
How do you prepare for putting out a project? Do you kind of have studio times and you say, okay, I'm going to write a song? Or does it just happen? Are you go with the flow creatively, or do you plan, or are you both?
Yeah, I just kind of go with the flow. But like, if I'm in project mode, where I know that I'm in the mode of making a project, it will be based off of the beats. If I'm working with a producer, then we'll just make from scratch and build the vibe that way. If it's a scenario where I'm writing off of a beat that you've sent me, I always know when I'm going to record over a song, because like, maybe out of the first 3 to 5 seconds, I know if I'm going to like the song. And then when the song drops, you say, right, yeah, this one. You always know as soon as you hear a tune, I want this.
Yeah.
I have to have that feeling every time with a beat. Like with the intro, when I come through, I recorded that like 3 times, bro, on different beats.
Yeah.
And like I said, it was like 85%. Then it was like 93%. Cool. The one before that, the final one, I was nearly going to drop that. And then I was still like, nah. I was playing it to people and they were like, nah, this is good, man. I'm like, nah, I don't want good, though. Do you get what I'm saying? And then the last beat I got, I said, right, this is the one. Straight away when I heard it, you get what I'm saying? That's and it. Then everyone else that I played it to said, nah, you're right, yeah, that one, that one. Yeah. I said, bro, shut up, man, you told me that one. You get me?
Proof that you literally can't trust anyone.
You have to go with your gut. As an artist, you have to go with your gut, but at the same time, it's good to take opinions from people that are not even in the music, people that are not even, they don't know what a 16 or 32 means. They just know if they like this or not.
Yeah, yeah.
I always play my music to my friends like that are not in the music. They can give me an unfiltered opinion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Even if you do get their opinion, respect it, but do what feels right to you visually.
Yeah, 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 definitely.
Obviously, the world's been kind of opened up to you, and you've not only toured as a solo artist or, you know, been places with Boy Better Know, but you've also toured with Chase and Status as well, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How does that vary? Are there distinct experiences that you have when on tour with an act like Chase and Status versus as a solo artist or Boy Better Know?
Yeah, because it's more work. You've got to work harder. The crowd's not directly come to see you. So some of them might not even know who you are. Some of them will know who you are, but all right, cool. Chase and Status, yeah, that's who we've come to see. So you got to make them realize, hold on, you get what I'm saying? Like the people that know you, they know you already, innit?
Yeah.
So that's what I had on my side. I had a few fans that heard I was on the tour and came. So that would be the main difference from my own tour, or touring with Boy Better Know, or touring with Skep. That you come out and do your main songs, everyone's going to go mad, or they're going to know the music, they're going to know you. Whereas with Chase and Status, they knew me, but like I said, I weren't the main act. Even though I came out with Chase and Status and performed funny with them on their set at the same time.
We used to rinse that one.
Trust me, that was my tune.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, it was cool though. It was a good experience.
Access all areas on FUBAR Radio.
I've got a new co-host for tonight, and tonight only. It's the one and only Michael Griffiths from Love Island. Michael!
Yes, it is. How is everybody? How are you?
I'm very good. I'm so delighted you're here in the studio.
I'm happy to be here, you know, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you're better in the flesh, I have to say.
Do you know what? A lot of people are saying that to me, that I'm actually a lot better in person, that I'm not the villain that they see on screen. And some people are saying that I seem taller in person as well. So I'm actually happy about that. TV must have made me look short.
Do you think Love Island made you a midget?
It must have made me look short, like.
Actually, you are taller than I thought.
Yeah, everyone's saying that, and they're saying, oh, you're better looking in person as well. So I'm like, oh, TV must have made me look a little bit worse for wear.
But I've got to say, I owe you an apology, Michael, because I watched Love Island and I thought, oh my goodness, this guy, he's not nice. He's a player.
Yeah.
And I thought, I was a bit vocal on it. I was like, I'm not sure if he's right. And then I met you at this morning show and you're one of the loveliest people. Really are. Honestly, I'm not just saying that. I wouldn't say that. You are such a sweet guy.
Well, yeah, it's one of those things. Like, people get to see 45 minutes to an hour of you on a screen. You don't get to see the whole 24 hours. So people don't make a perception based upon that 1 hour of a day. And then when they actually meet me in person, they're like, oh my God, you're actually a really nice guy. Like, you're not the arsehole off screen, honestly.
But do you have regrets with that, with the Amber situation? Because that was what made people think, oh my, when you went back.
I think it was more in the sense of how it was, like, handled, really. Like, I've apologised to Amber about things, about, like, the way that I've spoken to her, and I've told her why certain things happened in certain situations. But as for, do I regret anything in the villa? No, not really. Just because I've still got the outcome that I've got, and I've still got the response I've got. Me and Amber are friends. I'm friends with everybody in there, so... Friends with Joanna, friends with Amber, friends with everybody in there, friends with Anna as well. So, like, I know that me and Anna had a bit of a thing, but ultimately, when I left, Anna cried. Like, she was so upset that I was leaving. Amber, obviously, had that little conversation with her at the end of the day, and we made up. Like, previous to that anyway, so we were on good terms. And then when I got to see her at the reunion, and I was like, when she won, it was like I was so happy for her.
Yeah, I could see that was genuine.
Like, I was so happy for her when she won, and like, because obviously Greg's such a lovely guy. Like, even speaking to him like at the reunion, it was just like, it was nice to just be in that environment around them. The chemistry of me and Amber, like, it was there and it is there, but I feel like the chemistry we had was more of a friendship, and that's what ultimately I was missing. So I was happy that we did get to make up, because now the friendship that we had could potentially come back in the future. It's just one of those things that we're going to have to build on.
Do you think there is a future maybe with Amber in the future if things don't work out with her?
No. It'd only ever be a friendship with Amber.
Really?
It would only ever be a friendship, yeah.
And what about Joanna? Because there were rumours you had a little sneaky kiss outside the villa.
Yeah, there was. There was a sneaky kiss. But other than that, we haven't really seen each other, because both our schedules are just clashing at the minute, so like we haven't really had time to sit down and speak. We've only really seen each other at events, so it's been very few and far between. We speak to each other and keep up with each other, but it's just like making sure that we're dealing with the whole after Love Island kind
Love
of
Island.
Lifestyle. Yeah.
I've got a little game for you, Michael.
Okay.
Do you like games?
I like games.
Excellent. I'm going to pick a few little questions
out
of here, and you've got to answer, you've got to be truthful.
Oh,
no ducking and diving and trying to get out of this.
Okay,
right. Okay, so let's have a go. Right. Who was the best and the worst person to live with in the villa?
So the best person to live with in the villa is probably is Anton. No, it is. It's 100% Anton.
Really?
Yeah. Like, the guy has just got jokes for days. I mean, he used me razor to shave his bum. He played the joke on me and he actually got me.
He used his razor.
He joked with me and I was like, how are you going to do that? I shaved my face with that. I was like, go and throw it in the bin. Go and throw it in the bin. But he was joking.
And his mother used to
And his
do
mother
it,
shaved
mother...
his bum. So I was just like, that's not going nowhere near my
face.
Would
you let your mum shave your bottom?
No. That's a very intimate area.
Yeah, it is.
I love Anton's mum. Like,
I do.
She gave me a load of grief for after son, and I genuinely love her. Hey, I love her.
So the worst
person. The worst bit, Tommy. He's so filthy, like, he doesn't pick up his clothes. I mean, I was trying to teach him how to cook a little bit because he doesn't know how to cook. He doesn't have to clean up after himself. So I was like, Tommy, you need to start picking your clothes up because they stink. Like, let's
so
sort
Tommy's
this out.
Tommy's mucky.
He's a little bit mucky, but he's like a little brother to me.
I didn't write these questions, by the way.
Which couple
were the loudest in bed?
Tommy and Molly.
Oh, Tommy, really?
I slept next to them. And there's times I'm just looking at them like, can you stop? Like, I'm trying to sleep. Like, you're moving about, you're making all this noise. I'm like, just let me fall asleep, then continue your business. I don't know what they were doing, but they were active.
My word. So, who had the most annoying habits in the villa?
Annoying habits? Ooh, annoying habits.
Annoying habits.
Do you know what? Everybody said that they didn't snore, and everyone did. I openly said that I snore when I sleep on my back, but everyone else denied snoring, and they did. Like, Maura snored so loud, Curtis snored so loud, and Curtis farts in his sleep.
Curtis farts in his sleep?
And they stink. They stink.
Oh,
and then there's times
he'd
waft them about, and he's like, Curtis, can you please not?
What's that? Because he does like his food, I suppose, because he does tuck in.
Yeah.
Oh, no, so Curtis farting.
Farting, yeah.
Maura could snore.
Anton showered a lot. Like, he always liked to smell nice, but like you'd be like, Anton, you've had like 6 showers today, like chill. Chill out. But the worst one's just Tommy with his clothes. It has got to be Tommy with his clothes. Like, you'd walk around, actually Anton left his socks everywhere. You'd always find Anton's socks up and down the bedroom. He'd never get changed in one place. It'd be up and down the room. So, like, his shorts would be at one end, his t-shirt be in the middle, one sock would be down that.
Was he stripping like a catwalk show?
I really don't know. But he used to be a butler in the buff, didn't he?
Oh.
So maybe he's used to just taking his clothes off on the move.
Okay, I love that. Well, thank you. You've been so honest, Michael. Thank you for that.
No problem.
So hopefully they're not listening.
I hope they are listening.
Callum McSwiggan.
Callum McSwiggan.
On FUBAR Radio.
Today, I am joined by the absolutely gorgeous, the absolutely stunning. It is Mr. Freddie Bentley.
Hey.
Freddie, are you ready for a game?
Babe, I was born ready.
We haven't yet named this game, so maybe you can help us name it. So currently, it's unnamed sex toy game.
Right.
So maybe we can think of a title together for this game. But basically, in this game, I have written down in front of me the names of 6 different sex toys.
Okay.
Some of these are 100% real. And some of them have been completely made up and fabricated. I don't know the answers. I do not have the answers here in front of me. So I guess we're going to have to try and figure out these together. Okay. And our lovely producers will tell us the answers.
Oh, how exciting.
So do you want to hear the first one?
Let's do it.
Silicone Dino Shock.
That sounds like it would hurt.
It does sound like it would hurt. And I'm thinking, like, because have you seen those, like, whale penises?
No.
There's, like, you can get these dildos and they're, like, orca penises and they're like this long, like a foot long or something, maybe even longer.
I can barely get 8 inch, let alone that. Fuck that.
And they look terrifying as well because they're made to look like an actual like whale penis. And oh, so that's the thing that exists. So I'm thinking that this silicone dino shock might be like a T-Rex dick.
I think you're going to have to sign some T&Cs before entering that. That sounds dangerous.
It does sound dangerous. I think I'm thinking a little bit of vibrate on the go as well.
Yeah.
Give you that shock.
Ease it in. Bit of loop.
But I think they could have easily made this up as well.
I think it's made up. I've never heard it. I'm a big fan of Ann Summers, not gonna lie.
Yeah.
And
you know all their range, do you?
Yeah, I mean, not in and out. But I don't think it's real, do you?
I'm not sure. Like, I've done a lot of, like, I've done videos and stuff in the past on my YouTube channel where I've talked about, like, done, like, sex toy reviews and things.
I've done a sex toy
have
review.
You? Yeah. What did you review?
It was with Pink Nose, and we reviewed loads of sex toys, and that didn't come up.
The Dino Shock didn't come up. Did you do a magic wand? The massive one.
No, I didn't do that, but I had a unicorn anal bead. It was amazing.
What, a unicorn anal
bead? I had a towel, so you shove it up your arsehole and you're running around like a unicorn because it had a massive glittery towel.
Well, I'm not going to jump ahead, but I feel like that might actually be on the list here in front of
well,
me.
Well, that's real.
So are we saying not real to this?
I'm going to say not real.
Yeah, I'm going to go with you. I'm going to go with you, but I'm not convinced. Yeah, we are saying that this is completely made up. The silicone dino shock does not exist. The answer is, it is indeed fake.
It's fake.
It's fake.
I knew my sex toys, babe.
I shouldn't have doubted you.
No, I know. Not just follow my lead, hon, and you'll be fine.
All right, our next one is the Jimmy Jane Hello Touch.
That sounds like a toy.
Jimmy Jane.
What
Jimmy
does that Jane. Mean?
I think that's like, maybe that's like the brand.
Branding.
Jimmy Jane Hello Touch.
Maybe there's a celebrity called Jimmy Jane and they brought their own range out. That is possible.
It is possible. It is possible. It's making me think of Hello Kitty, which is making me feel very uncomfortable.
It made me, I was going to say that, but I didn't want to get,
you know. Didn't want to get in trouble.
You didn't want to get in trouble. That's what I mean. I thought, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut.
Yes, you me, do the it's talking. Always me. I don't know. Like, this doesn't, to me, this doesn't sound that elaborate. Like, it doesn't sound exciting enough to be fake. Do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
I know what you mean. It's very like...
kind of generic.
Tesco. Like,
yeah.
Like just one simple word. Yeah. Branding.
I could see this being on a sex toy website.
I think it's real.
I do as well. Should we say real?
Let's say real.
Okay, we are saying real. And the answer is... oh, it is real.
It is real.
Woo! Okay, so for those with a penis, you can use it to stimulate the prostate as well as other parts. And for those with a vagina, it can be used to stimulate the clitoris.
Wow. Have we got any of them?
And it's like vibrating silicone finger pads and it can be used all over. And it's very expensive, $145.
Oh my God.
Wow, that is an investment. That is an expensive toy.
Oh wait, I've just seen a picture of it.
Oh, that looks fun.
It looks so much fun.
So it like, it attaches to your fingers and I guess it makes your fingers more powerful for having a little play.
Posh away of fingering.
Yeah, posh away of fingering. Exactly that.
Wow.
It looks like fun.
Please sponsor me.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to pay $145 for it. No. That is steep. I did once get gifted a gold plated vibrator.
Was it good?
I never used it. I sold it on eBay.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was like, I don't need a gold plated.
No. I've got a gold little bullet and it was cute.
Yeah? What, actual gold on it?
Oh, not like real, babe.
This one was like real.
No,
like real,
you
like
are joking.
Gold plating. Probably not like expensive gold, but yeah, like real gold.
Wow.
Yeah. That's why amazing. I sold it. I was like, I don't need this. Like, I could do with the money.
I don't blame you. I'll do that all the time.
Should we do the next one?
Let's do it.
Squeal Go.
Oh, God.
Sounds a bit shit.
I vomited in my mouth.
Did you?
Squeal. It sounds like scream and go.
Well, I was thinking that just makes me think of pigs, and I don't want to go down that. I don't want to go down that road,
no,
Freddie.
You don't want to be shagging no pigs.
I don't want to be having sex with pigs. We're not about that. We do not approve of bestiality. Squeal. Go.
This is turned weird.
Oh, I don't know. Like again, it sounds a bit rubbish. Like if you did make that up, producers, you could have done a better job. That was a bit naff.
She's fuming.
She's livid with me now. I'm in big trouble.
Squealing pig. Joel, I'm going to say that it's true because people have some weird fetishes.
I'm thinking it's false and they've deliberately made it sound really rubbish to try and trip us up.
Well, how about we split decisions?
You want to go against each other?
Well, I just think, someone's got to win, haven't they?
If you want to turn it into competition, we can turn it into competition, Freddie.
It's a game, isn't it?
Fine. We'll be against each other. I'm saying that this is made up and you're saying this is...
I'm saying it's real.
Okay, we'll see who's right, shall we? Answers, please. It is real! Oh, Freddie.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? Fuck you.
Yeah, I'm one ahead.
I invite you onto my radio show. We try a new game and you turn on me.
It's going to be Wednesdays with Freddie soon. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, it's now Freddie's show.
You're absolutely shocking at this game.
Back row and chill on FUBAR Radio.
Viola Davis, let's hear it.
Viola Davis, here we go.
Back row and chill with Johanna James and Noel Clark on FUBAR Radio.
The movie's obviously based on a play, which I didn't realise before I went in, but I worked out pretty soon. Mm. Oh, okay, this is interesting. It's all based around the one house and that. Mm-hmm. In making that, did you film it like a play? Did you do it in linear order, or what was the process in?
We did it sequentially, so that was really important. Otherwise, it would have been just too much. The first scene is 33 pages. There were 11-page monologues, 4-page monologues. There was a lot of times that one set. I shouldn't call it a set. It was an actual house. Okay. On the Hill District. It helped us a lot because, see, the thing about August Wilson is all of his plays take place in tight confines of a backyard because it's metaphorical towards us being roped in by a culture, roped in by circumstances, and wanting to bust out and be a big man and make our lives worth something. So it would not have worked if we had different sets, like shooting in, I don't know, just some big department store somewhere.
Yeah, or out
on the street. Yeah. The backyard became another character.
I want to just really home in on your performance because I was... in tears in this this screening to the point where you're trying to keep it in but I couldn't. What was your process just from an actor's point of view? How did you get to that intensity?
Besides breathing and all of that, it's all the boring acting stuff that no one wants to really hear about in terms of doing bios and creating Rose. When you're first introduced to Rose and she's coming out and she's crocheting and what you see is a woman even with her hair gray, her apron, her wide hips, someone who's very much middle-aged, always cooking, always in the kitchen, always offering someone food, always saying, come into my heart, come into my life, because that's my only purpose. That's it. It's 1957. It was very important for me to create that specific character so that by the time Troy gives me the news, I can't prepare that because it's a surprise. I couldn't sit and go, okay, I'm going to play that character in the big monologue. I'm going to play her first. So I'm going to come out mad, pissed off, all of that. I had to create the joy. I had to create the investment of love and that investment of 18 years. So by the time it's taken away, it's there.
And I was so surprised at how it set the 50s culture so strong. And it's so shocking. It's so close to us nowadays, but so... backwards my heart broke for your character.
Absolutely.
But also how relevant any woman being told that 50 years ago, 100 years ago, or tomorrow, it's the same raw, and you just absolutely nailed it. So that's why it really upset me, and probably anyone who could ever have their heart broken. I was like, oh.
Absolutely.
And just quickly to round off with the Golden Globes, what was that like personally being there, and was it all a blur? Did you black out? Was it like...
It's never a blur anymore. Okay. I try not to make it a blur because I try to remember it. At 51, it becomes very important for you to remember every moment of your life. It really does. You'll see. It was very important for me. Meryl Streep said, I will be at your Walk of Fame ceremony and introduce you if you give me the Cecil B. DeMille Award. I did not see it as a fair trade, but I wanted to honor her in introducing her. I wanted to honor her, how much she contributed to me and every artist out there. Because you know what? Here's the thing about acting. It is not rocket science, but it is an art form, and it's an important one in a world where people walk around blissfully unaware of themselves and others. And we can't do that. We expose. And she does it so beautifully. I wanted to honor her. I just felt like I was awake for the whole thing. I was, metaphorically, I was awake. And I had a fabulous time.
Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville on FUBAR Radio.
Jordan Stevens.
Hey.
What's going on? I'm going to be brutally honest with you. Because you're my brethren.
Please be honest with me.
Yeah, like, I didn't even check why you were here. I was just like, oh, Jordan's coming.
I am not going to lie to you, bro. It's but like you're coming to check you at work. You're just like, oh, bro, what are you saying?
I messaged Justin at like midday. And it was just like, oh.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, no, yeah.
Oh, today,
cool.
Yeah.
What did I say to you? Am I seeing you today? I was like, oh, what is today?
You don't understand how important your response was, because that I could have easily just thought this was another day.
It's had a massive impact on your life, hasn't it?
What, mental health?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, for real. It's still something you've got to work with now. It's a day-to-day thing. It's about managing yourself.
Yeah.
I don't believe in normal.
But I remember, you know, it's a very kind of dark memory to bring up, but
right.
I do remember being on tour with you at one point and one of your friends actually taking his own life while we were on tour.
Do you know what I mean?
So when I do think of the kind of person you are and the experiences we've had together, I realise that it is very organic and real to you.
Yeah.
And it's a very honest kind of vocation, it seems, you know what I mean?
It's a tough one to kind of escape, I want to say.
Because the problem is, and escape's an interesting word that you use, because I feel like, and this is the case with everything, right? Woke now is such a fucking, it's such a buzzword, isn't it?
Yeah.
The amount of board meetings that involve the word woke that used to just involve the word sales is mental, right? And it goes towards the whole subject of mental health. So I say it involves the whole subject of mental health as well. And do you feel like some people are kind of raving about it a bit disingenuously in this?
What, mental health?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think loads of things have been commodified. But it's something that is close to my heart, mental health. I think I really want the motion for the next, for going forward, for it to be a thing of just action. So that's where you can move away from disingenuity.
Mm-hmm.
Words. That's where you can move towards but towards something more genuine. It's just action. And I think that's the thing where it's like, I want people just to feel like that, so they can manage their specific circumstance and just get on with it. Do you know what I mean? There should be no shame in feeling a bit odd. I've got ADHD. I'm on and off medication. It's tough. But as long as I feel like I've managed to create an environment for myself that can, I feel supported, then that's all that needs to happen.
Yeah.
What about you guys with your mental health?
So we asked the questions here, bro.
No, but I'm asking.
No, I'm not. It's you. You know, I've always been a supporter of good mental health practices.
Right.
You know,
like,
I mean?
Self-care.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Expressing yourself. I'm a big expressionist, so I think that kind of, if that's your, if you're that way inclined, I think that's always a good way. I don't think you should force yourself to do anything. That,
yeah.
Self-care is important, but I think that there's so many, it's so easy to be led astray by people that think they know what's right for you.
Yeah.
That I think, do you know what I mean? But everyone,
that's
takes,
a massive thing to say,
right?
I love that.
Because social media is like, it's the biggest part of 90% of, I don't know the stats, like, but it's a big, it's the biggest part of most people's lives, let's be brutally honest. And who knows who the PhD holders are or whatever kind of certification you need to be able to actually genuinely tell people what measures they should
be,
you know what I mean, to improve or maintain their own mental health, you know. So people kind of take all this advice and they take it as gospel, and you don't know who's kind of swallowed the wrong pill, so to speak.
I think social media is like the biggest contributor to rising statistics surrounding
hell yeah. It's literally the gift and the curse.
Yeah. And I feel as though, you know, it's one of these things now as well where you don't want to fall into a world where simply because you can label yourself, you almost manifest something.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's easier to maybe be depressed than it is to acknowledge. This is the real passion of mine, is that naming or being open about how you feel. Depression and anxiety, with a lot of the work I've been doing, like emotional work I've been doing, they're, in my belief, inhibitory emotions, so they're normally covering something else up. So like, you get depressed if you're like super sad or hurt or whatever, and your body just goes, I'm not moving. And anxiety is the thing where it's like your body can't stop moving because you're scared of feeling sad. It's those emotions, I think, are at the core of humanity, and that's why I think it's important to at least begin talking, because talking is a catharsis. It is something that can at least move it away. I know when I feel anxious, if I ring a cup of bridge in, you know, I feel like, we hadn't spoken in like a couple months and I rung you while I was in my car. What you might not have known is I felt quite anxious generally about my life on that journey, and after I spoke to you, I felt great. And I think that's what one of those amazing aspects of just speaking. And then I similarly wouldn't feel away about being honest with you. Or maybe I even was. Maybe I was honest with you on the phone.
No, you were. You genuinely were. I didn't want to say it because, you know, what's it called? That lawyers give you something privilege.
You know the one.
No, but it helps. It helps. And I think that's what we want to get to, is the root of these things, the connectivity between people, and hopefully we can live in a space where we are detached actually from the kind of social technological rope that binds us. It's a lot, bruv.
I feel like it's almost inextricable sometimes, you know, because I feel like if you want to kind of unplug yourself from the matrix,
it's hard.
You've got to extricate yourself from all the friendships where those people still immerse themselves in it for a few hours a day, you know.
Because it's a promo thing. What's your relationship?
Like last year I got thrown into like this whole thing where like everyone knows my business, everyone's involved in my stuff. So the moment things start going wrong, you literally think to yourself, mate, I've just literally effed my whole life. Because everyone else is looking at you going, oh, you've done something really terrible. But at the same time, for me, it was like I literally took 2 weeks off and was like just chilling with my boys, my closest boys, chilling there, spending time talking about that situation, but then at the same time talking about things that weren't part of that situation to kind of like bring me back into being myself, man. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
You can let yourself like get caught up in the thing of being like, oh my days, what am I going to do now? What am I going to do now? But,
it's outside your control.
Like, do you know what I mean? It's like, really and truly, what's done is done, innit? You need to kind of find a way to bring yourself back to being confident and that kind of thing. But like, the only way you can really do that is to like actually like communicate and talk to people and have people bring you out of your, out of your thing, innit? Because if you hold it in, you're just going to make yourself depressed and like...
And it's all fluid. Kind of stuff, well, the biggest lesson I've had to learn, which is why my interest stems into the agenda discussion as well, because I don't think necessarily guys are fed this notion of emotion. But like, it's the whole thing of it goes, it's a ride, it's a journey, and it fluctuates for some people more severely than other people, but that's why it's so important to communicate how you feel at the time. If this helps anyone, the other day I didn't take my ADHD meds because I was going to an audition and I didn't want to like quash myself. I don't know, like, it doesn't really make much of a thing. It was more, you know, it's more of a mental thing for myself. It wasn't against my like a doctor's wishes or anything. I can't do that. It's okay. If it was a lot stronger, I'd think twice. But regardless, did it. And then it got too late for me to take it, so I was like, alright, cool. And then I went to sleep, and this is one of the things that it helps me with, is to balance me out energy wise because otherwise I have quite big dips, so I'm like really gassed in the morning, and then I just conk out at like 2. Fell asleep with my girlfriend, and then I woke up 45 minutes later and I was so depressed. And this is the thing, I think it's actually quite a common thing to wake up after a nap in the day and feel disorientated and quite sad. But like, it was one of these things where I almost wasn't ready, but because I've done so much, I've managed to allow myself to understand that it's a fluid process. I feel like I managed to put the reins on where my mind could have gone in response. Because you spiral, innit? I could have then gone, oh God, and this is happening and that is happening and I didn't do this, that. But I believe I managed to level myself out in the knowledge that it was just a feeling that had been incurred by me sleeping in the day and it's something that would pass.
Right.
But like, my God, like, I could have just gone back through a 20 pack of cigarettes. I'd take my cigarettes, just ring up my manager and be like, I don't make music anymore. I'm leaving this, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a fluid thing, man, and these things come and go.
Access all areas on FUBAR Radio.
We have the very lovely Chris Boyson in the studio.
How are you, mate?
Good. Nice to have you in.
How are
you? Thank you very much. I'm good, darling. You're right?
Yeah, I'm good. I haven't seen you for a while.
I know.
When did I last see you?
You've been quiet.
I've been very, very quiet. Yeah. I've just been keeping your head down.
A low profile.
Trying to.
Well, it's me.
Well, apart from your Instagram pics, which...
I've got to put them somewhere, haven't I? They've got to go somewhere when I take them.
That's true. I don't blame you. How are you?
I did stay quiet on Instagram for a good week, though.
Whole week?
Yeah. I was sweating and everything.
Well, it's hard. It's so hard not to go on that Instagram.
So hard to post some pictures.
How is life? How is single life? Are you single?
It's it's all a bit...
Is it a Facebook it's complicated it's all, status?
If I had Facebook, maybe that might be the status. Now, do you know what? If everything's up in here at the moment in my life. I've just been getting my head down with work, concentrating on the business side of things. But, yeah, I've been getting asked that quite a lot, obviously, and been getting a lot of grief. At the moment in the media, so
again, but you don't stay single for long, looking with this body.
Yeah, I don't really know. I'm not here obviously to talk about the relationship or anything like that. But it, obviously it's about the news that I'm going to give you about my website and that and my business. But I'm not going to say a bad word about obviously who you're asking about. I think she's a lovely girl, and
this is Katie Price for anyone that doesn't know, just in case.
You were not Katie Price. You didn't tell me. No. Yeah.
I know what you guys are looking for.
No. Because it's reasonable to suggest that most people would be. That's why they know. Why they know you in the first place.
I get it. But like I say, I wouldn't say a bad word about the girl. She's a lovely girl, and we just there's a lot of stuff that happens in the background that a lot of people don't know about in relationships.
Of course.
And
as Lizzie knows,
you can't always believe what you see in the press.
Very true.
Me and Kate both had a hard time in our relationship in the press, and you just have to deal with a lot of shit. And I've learnt that. So I think sometimes it's better just to keep my mouth shut.
I think you're probably right.
I think you're right, Chris. But it's very difficult when you go out with someone that is, you know, high profile and you're followed and people write stories and are always true, as you say. I've been there, you know.
And you're looking at me. I have not.
I was going to say, Chris, that Steve's been there, but he hasn't. But it can be quite tough, I know. And you are...
You're dealing with it well.
But you're looking in fine freckle.
Thank you very much. I do try. I've got to know because of the job.
You're a personal trainer.
Yeah, it's a bit like if you walk into hairdressers and they've got a crap haircut. You're not going to get them to do your hair, are you?
It does happen from time to time.
Yeah. I mean, what hairdressers did you guys have?
Oh, bad.
Oh, first one. You're next, Lizzie. Shut up.
Go on. Okay, good. I'm
bad. Hold on. That's not fair.
I did have to take a little hair off your dress earlier.
Sorry. Yeah,
let's talk about something more exciting.
So what is the website? Come on, tell us. Something really exciting.
You're launching something today.
Something more exciting than, my personal life. I'd rather talk about...
Fine. Tell us. What's this website?
I only asked if you were single or not.
Yeah, to be fair, that wasn't the only question.
I didn't mention any...
The look on your eyes was... Elaborate, mate. I'm not silly.
We're asking. Tell us about your website. Explain what's happening with you now.
No, I wouldn't know if you're single or not. Anyway, we'll go...
The answer is it's complicated.
Either way, you ain't getting a chance, all right?
You don't want to go there. Moving on.
I feel like I've stitched myself right up now for these questions.
I'm asking you about...
Can I answer his question, please? Because you keep butting in.
Sorry. Please answer.
Right, thank you. So I decided to come up with this website. So it's for people that want to lose weight when they're at home, single mums, you know, like
people that don't have time for the gym.
Yeah, people that haven't got time for the gym. People that are scared to go in the gym. People that think they're too overweight, self conscious.
And gyms are quite scary, aren't they?
You know, gyms are really intimidating.
I don't like them always.
Unless you know what you're doing, gyms are really intimidating. You get guys smashing weights around, making silly noises, trying to look good, taking selfies.
I'm always one next to me that's grunting.
And you're probably the one taking selfies as well. But
no.
So yeah, it's an environment that can be intimidating, and most of my clients training me because it's one-to-one and it's I've got my own studio, so no one else is watching.
Gosh. Do you know what's quite interesting about this conversation, Chris, is that I had no idea that you were... I knew you were a personal trainer because of what I'd read. I had no idea that you were so passionate about what you do.
This is why
I
wanted him on the show, because it's not what you see.
Has it been quite hard for you to like have to split yourself like that in the last couple of weeks or months? Or
I think people just, like I say again, a lot of my clients, my new clients that come in, they say, oh, do you know what, you're actually a nice bloke. And I'm like, well, what did you think? But because of the shit that they read and the shit you see and stuff like that, you kind of get that character given to you. And I'm like, I kind of feel like saying sometimes, I've been saving people's lives for 10 years, literally saving, like, people that are on the edge of suicide and obesity to the point where they're actually going to pass away. And I get so much amazing feedback. People inviting me to their weddings where I've saved their life, and then I get married and stuff. And then I get some arse in the press that says, oh, he's this. And I'm like, really? Like, what more can I do?
But this is the thing. I think this is a good opportunity for you to speak up for yourself.
Chris, look, and I get this question all the time. Do you feel you've kind of brought it on yourself with some of the kind of stories and outfits, like the little... Remember the little budgie smugglers you wore? And
they're called boxers.
Well, they were very tight. And I don't know what
to be fair, it was lucky I was wearing some. I never wear boxers.
But do you think it's been brought on yourself a bit? I mean, I get that all the time in my outfits. People say,
yeah, maybe. If I'm honest, I'm not going to sit here and lie and say that I was, yeah, maybe I played on a few of the pictures and like having a laugh. Like if I know something's happening, but I mean, as you know, a lot of them you don't know are happening. But like if there is, I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah.
And
I don't. I want to see this.
And you don't want to see it.
Oh, my mum
saw it, and I never see it. I never saw it, and I woke up to a message from my mum saying, "What the fuck is going on, Chris?" And I was like, "Mother, I don't know what you're talking about." And she sent me a screenshot, and I thought, "I'm fucked for life."
I like, know. That is can it. I say? Like,
sorry, I just swore, didn't I?
It did.
You're
it's
allowed
okay,
to
you're
swear.
Allowed to. Yes, you're allowed. No, I know. When I saw that, it blew my socks off. I think Bruno Tonioli sent me that picture. I remember going, "What the hell?"
Oh, leave off.
No.
What's the deal with the nose? Did you have a nose job? I saw pictures.
Yeah.
You did. God, it's a bloody good one. You look great.
To be fair, it looks great.
It's still bloody big, isn't it?
Was it something you were conscious of?
No, do you know what it was? For years, anyway, when I started boxing, after I couldn't play football anymore, I had a lump in the bridge of my nose, just from the scar tissue from repetitive. Obviously, as you see, a lot of boxers' noses, they're busted up. And it did affect my breathing. And someone recommended, like, reconstructive, the top bit of the bridge of my nose. And I never really wanted to do it because I was worried about how it would look. And then just found a specific company that had done it loads and said, "Look, we can help you with that." And I just done it. And to be honest, since then, I still can't smell, though. My senses have gone.
Is that gone forever?
God, all this perfume I'm wearing.
But
black panther.
Yeah, I can't smell you at all. Can't smell me. But yeah, no, so I had that done, and I can actually breathe better than I've...
Wow.
Yeah, so it was not for just vanity. I mean, I didn't like the look of my nose because of the lump there, but there was a bit of a mixture of both. Really,
fine, I'm glad to have cleared that up.
That's a good joke because I didn't notice, and I think that's a sign of a good surgeon.
Yeah, they say that, don't they? Yeah, because I didn't want it to be looking like a silly nose. Yeah, I just said I want that lump taken out. That was all it is.
Chris, thanks so much for coming in.
Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
The wonderful Aisling B. Aisling.
Yes, Dan.
Maybe you can help me with this. I've seen movies, right?
Have you?
Yeah, I've seen movies. We talk about them here. A lot of films, as you know, being Irish yourself,
a lot of
people in the New York of America love to say they're Irish.
Yes.
Even though their grandma was Irish 17 generations ago.
Yeah, but that, can I say shit stinks? Yeah. That doesn't wear off. It's like a mushroom on a tree. You can cut it off, but it keeps growing back.
But you say that like it's something you can't help.
Yes, I don't think you can help being Irish. I think it kind of sits in your blood. Also, there's recently...
It's like Guinness, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly until the next morning, it doesn't really... There's been recent studies that show things like starvation pass through the DNA of people. So in general, people who've come from backgrounds where their parents have been starved or anything like that, it sits in your DNA and kind of trickles down. Yeah.
There's been scientific...
So it kind of passes on, especially if things are overbearing things like cultural or religious or something like that. Like in Ireland, people are obsessed with buying houses and land and owning land.
Yeah.
And the idea of needing to give up yours to the past where our land was taken away from us, like Irish people in general, that's what kind of almost caused a recession, this kind of obsession of owning your own property and land.
But do American Irish...
Descendants, that's the word
I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Do they talk about the famine if it didn't happen to them?
I think it's more... So a lot of the people who went over would have been people who helped build America and were fleeing. Yes, fleeing hunger, which is something you can flee.
Well, they heard about all the hamburgers.
We got to get a New York City. I think the biggest thing is the effect of the Catholic Church. It's rare in any country of the world where there is one religion. Mm-hmm. Like still, in a recent census, 96% of Ireland were Catholic in this modern day age, and the other 14% were ghosts. I've heard about the ghost community.
Aisling,
yes.
I once said your name live on stage and you corrected me.
Yeah.
It is pronounced Aisling, right?
It felt like if I was to have spared your feelings there and I had to change my name forever because you'd said it wrong, it felt disingenuous. So I did have to correct it.
What did I say back then? Can you remember?
Oh, I think you said like Saoirse Ronan or something like that.
Where does your name come from?
Ireland.
Well, I know that bit, but the B is not your...
I'm very sassy this morning. Yeah. I told you I had...
You're annoyed because we took a photo, aren't you? That's what it is.
So,
you were on your way to the gym.
I was not on my way to the gym, but I have dressed as if I was on my way out of the gym. I arrived here today in my crappy clothes so I could then walk home so I could get a bit of exercise. I arrive here, I'm told suddenly it's about films, which I can tell you right now I know nothing about. So this is going to be...
Film and television.
Okay, and television. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Which I know you didn't have when you were
young. I hope we can
chat
about MasterChef.
We can, yeah, we can.
And then they want to take a photo of me in my sweaty clothes, like I don't have a soul or a sense of self.
This is what happens when you don't let your agent do the booking.
Yeah.
If your agent had done this, they would have been demanding, like, hotel for overnight stay, because it was at a ridiculously early time in the morning.
Yeah,
and
like 10 a.m.
Yeah, so I had to do it direct.
Oh, God, you're so
cheeky. Yeah, your name. This isn't your birth name, is it, Aisling B?
Aisling is, yeah.
Aisling is.
Aisling is a Gaelic for an Irish dream or a vision, and it was this woman who was in Irish poetry as a person who would come and save Ireland from the wrath and tyranny of Britain, but Aisling actually just never turned up, so they were like, oh, well, we just have
to
put
up with it. Do you feel like you're living up to that?
No, I really like Britain. I really love English people, so she is a bit of a Judas as well. I think that's a new footnote on top of the Irish meaning. And then B was, my father's name was Brian, and my real name is Aisling O'Sullivan, but there was already an Aisling O'Sullivan on the list
what
of
the
Irish
bloody
actors.
Chances.
Really high in Ireland. O'Sullivan, okay. Really high. So I always went by Aisling B. O'Sullivan, but like you can't be called Judy Mary Dench and go, oh no, I'm the other Judy. So I had to drop off the O'Sullivan bit.
Stay home and chill, keeping you company during the coronavirus.
Matt Crosby, live from the Fringe.